First and foremost, I want to start by thanking Coach Mickey Joseph. And I'll tell you, Mickey Joseph and our staff and our players did an outstanding job. You know, many of you here recognize 9 games ago when we made a change, and Mickey Joseph was the head coach. Mickey did an outstanding job. I had a lot of respect for Coach Joseph prior to him becoming our interim coach. I have more respect for him now. The way that he worked, continued working, doing the right things, fighting hard for these young men and investing in them was really something. And to see them have that moment against Iowa was really, really special. So really, really proud of Coach Joseph and his staff and our players, and I want to thank them. I want to thank Julie, Brian, Vivi, and Leona. Thank you guys so much for allowing your husband and your father to become the head coach at the University of Nebraska. You're going to love this place. Husker Nation is going to love you, and we're going to support you and your family. So thank you for believing in us, and thanking you. I want to thank you for being Huskers.
I will do my utmost best to respect the tradition, respect that honor, and I hope that you guys will trust me to take us to another place, take us into the future, because it can happen. And as Trev said, the time is now. The time is now. And it's not really just about me. It's really about all of us, because we have to be all in. If you want to see something fail, have a bunch of people stand around and wait to see it fail. If you want to see something succeed, everybody, even when you disagree, just move ahead and push ahead. It's going to take everybody, everybody who bleeds red, to get the Nebraska Cornhuskers to where they're supposed to be. But we will do it. But we'll have to do it together.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast, the Husker Fan Sports Show.
Welcome to the Go Big Redcast. I'm your host, David Gaspers, and I'm with Honky.
Well, Trev said he didn't want to win the press conference, but they kind of won the press conference, and I'm pretty impressed. Welcome to Nebraska, Coach Rule.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, I don't know if Trev won the press conference, but Coach Rule definitely won the press conference. Also with Boomer.
Well, you get, you know, Matt Rule to Nebraska, you get Luke Fickle to Wisconsin, and then you get the tragic comedy of Auburn hiring Hugh Freeze. So looking forward to watching that explode in the next season. Good job, Auburn.
It's a perfect fit all the way around.
Yeah, in a darkly horrible way, yes. But good work.
Also with Redcast, Rob.
Well, you know, Coach said today that, you know, it's not always about, you know, building the team, but building relationships with people. And, you know, I'm glad that he said that, because I've been trying to tell you guys this about us for a really long time. And, you know, these are some great relationships that we're building here, you know, so, and the quality of the product, it just keeps getting better.
You know, Rob, what makes a relationship building easier is winning. And that is what I hope the Redcast will see under Coach Rule, right, Honky? I mean, you took that all in today, the whole event, and the Redcast has been through some lean times as a show, but I am optimistic that we are finally got the guy in place to change that. What do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. Hashtag winning. That's what we need. And today was a start. It's just a press conference. We've gone through press conferences before on the Redcast, but it was a good start at the very least, and hopefully it leads to a lot of those wins.
Absolutely. Honky, before we take a deep dive, should we acknowledge our sponsors?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, we're associated with the Herdat Network and Hail Varsity. So if you want to go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe, use Redcast at the checkout, and you get 10% off. Alumni Hall, 2 Lincoln locations, downtown, 1120 P Street and South Point Pavilions, just to the south, kind of behind Barnes & Noble. We have the photo of it there. We really want to push people down to the south one. If you haven't had a chance to check it out, definitely do. It's a great location there. And then Smack and Smooch, custom shirts, specialty items, Shane and Lord out there in Elwood. You can find them on Facebook and Twitter, and all of our cool Go Big Redcast stuff. You can go purchase that from there if you want. So, but yeah, Dave, it's a new era here. Took the photo of this, and they had the screens on this morning as I was driving onto campus. Matt Rhule on the big screen, and the offseason has officially begun with the new era of Husker football. Welcome to Nebraska, Coach Rhule.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's been a heck of a weekend. You know, we did start to see the Rhule chatter pick up last week. And in reality, it sounds like, as Trevor was describing today, that Matt Rhule was, you know, target 1A, I believe is what he described him. And I've heard various different descriptions that, you know, Rhule was really one of the absolute very first folks that he looked into. And I think there's a lot that went into that. I mean, Trev mentioned that analytics played a part of this. You know, they used the data to try to identify the right coaching candidates, and then I'm sure vetted thoroughly. Did he say 13 different people he talked to? Not necessarily candidates, but
he spoke with 13 different coaches. Now, I doubt they were candidates, but yeah,
that's right.
It's like calling references, right? Like for for a job interview. Yeah. That's all.
That's right. That's right. But you know, Honky, I've listened to a lot of sports radio today. I'm sure most of you did, and obviously listened to the press conference. I mean, heck, even Governor-elect Jim Pillen was on one of the shows. I was like, wow, he's just like talking like a normal guy. He's other things he probably should be focused on, but hey, everybody's excited about the new coach, right? But I was just listening to Chris Schmidt on Hill Varsity Radio before we got on the show, and he had Paul Meyerberg on, the USA Today guy. He's one of the very early national guys that had, even really before there was any real connective tissue between Nebraska and Rhule, he just said, this is a great fit. And it seems like Meyerberg has written several stories about Rhule's tenure at both Temple and Baylor, really admires him and just felt like, wow, this is – and Paul Meyerberg, someone who has been covering college football for a long time and is from our – generation or a little bit older that remembers Nebraska in the 80s and 90s very fondly, and is like, that's the right fit, right? And so, like, as the week broke down, and you know, Boomer, I mean, you were the first one on our text read, like, Fickell to Wisconsin. It was like, whoa. But I think, as you heard today, I think Trev and Matt Rhule seem so well aligned that I believe that was Trev Albert's choice from the get-go. Boomer?
Yeah, I would think so, because they talked so much about how important that alignment is and having everyone working together towards that same end goal, whether it's not just one athletic director decide to let the coach do whatever they want. It's more that the entire department is now going in the same direction, from, you know, the athletic director, the regents, the college president, the coach. They all have a vision. They're all sharing that same vision, and they're all working to make that happen. You know, he's going to put a staff together that's going to share that vision. You're already kind of seeing that fall into place. And, you know, there were other names that you could hire out there, but I think we've tried that so many times in the past where we're just hiring a coach for whatever reason, which doesn't make sense with, you know, the department that we have, the players that we have, the staff we have, whatever it is. And this seems to be the first time we've actually tried to bring all this together in a culture that makes sense. So,
crazy stuff. I mean, I even heard Ted Carter was talking about how he actually first met Matt Rhule. When he was at Navy, obviously at the academy, and they were playing Temple which conference would that have been at the time? At the AAC?
AAC.
And they actually played in the championship game, I think, and Temple stomped on them. And I mean, I think Ted Carter had a lot of things, really positive things to say about Matt Rhule from that early interaction almost a decade ago.
Yeah, it seems like, I don't even know how to put this without, because I'm not trying to crap on any of the
drink outcomes. The Rhule-Aid, Rob, it's all right.
No, and it's not even about drinking the Rhule-Aid. It seems like Rhule has the respect of his peers, which is something that it never felt like Frost really had that in the Big Ten, right? Like, nobody was afraid of Frost, right? He came into that first press conference, said the Big Ten was going to have to catch up with him. And I think, and every single person just put a target right there on him from that minute. And I mean, guys just wanted to take it to him no matter what, right? Like, every single game, it felt like we were getting the best out of teams. I mean, even Northwestern, for Christ's sake, this year, the only game they won all year was against us in the first game of the season. Yep. And it was almost like their Iowa game, you know, for our Iowa game, right? Like, where we're just like, oh, we'll just be happy just to beat this one team this year, you know, felt that way. So
yeah,
I'm really looking forward to it, because it just seems like the way he approached it today felt like there was an actual focus and a plan in place, and you could almost see him visualizing it there on the stage, and it felt really good. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, hockey, I mean, I think Rule's reputation is a program builder, right? And I think that is what Trev was looking for. And I think the respect that Rob is referring to for Coach Rule from his peers is that he has taken both Temple and Baylor in both difficult situations and done great things with them.
Yeah, I mean, this tweet of the week here is all about that, Dave. It's program builder, it's developer. How many times, in fact, that tweet here from Huskers a couple days ago was development, development, development. And they showed a whole bunch of different statistics here of things that he did at Baylor and at Temple. And to your point there, it hasn't always been immediately pretty. And I guess maybe that's one of the things that is Rob pumps Kool-Aid over the offseason. I'm sure I'll be a part of that too. We also pull back a little bit and go, this isn't necessarily a quick fix, or at least Rule hasn't shown that it's been a quick fix at either of his two spots. Completely yep. different scenarios. It's very important for people to understand what he took over at Baylor compared to what he's taking over here. I mean, that was a mess
half on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, that was a mess on and off the field. But even with that mess, he took it over, and within 1 year, you know, the first year they won, what, one or two games? Second year they get to a bowl game, and by the third year they're winning double-digit games. I mean, I think from a development standpoint, that's what we're kind of hoping for. We're hoping for something to be a little quicker than that. We don't want to have to go through that one-win or two-win season next year. But he develops players. He has multiple – what's interesting is he has multiple schemes, it seems like he can do. He has multiple staffs yeah. that he's worked with. It's not like he just has one staff of guys. These are the guys that come with me everywhere I go. He's had different people at different places. And then he said when he was at Temple, I'd get under center and we had fullbacks and it was old school. And then we get to Baylor and it was more spread. And you know, he can switch it up from where he goes and even talk about maybe wanting to run a little option when he gets here. So he said a lot of things that will make a lot of people happy today. Again, I think he won the press conference, and we'll see how much that stuff comes true. I did see a quote there from a Vegas Jer who I didn't see that, but he mentioned that Sip said that Carter even saved the deal, that President Carter did. And so I think that was interesting. The alignment between all the leadership, and we've talked about leadership in the past. I can remember saying it back in the day when we had Moose and all that, but this, I will say, this feels really good right now from Carter on down to Alberts. They seem to be lockstep with each other, even Pillen, a former Husker at Governor. Everyone in leadership, we've got some ownership over this program right now.
From the highest office in the state.
And the
funny Rule thing gets paid quite a bit more than him. So
yeah, I mean, no kidding. You know, the funny thing is when this whole process started, one of the first names was Aranda. And we would talk about Aranda being the guy because there's connections, right? He had connections to Joseph and Bush and I remember us saying at the time, everyone's got connections. There's just connections all over the place. That's what football is. It's just one big fraternity. And I never would have put two and two together with Carter and Rule going back to his Navy and Temple days. That never would have. And the second he said that, I was like, you know what? That's what happens in these coaching searches, is just connections just come out of the woodwork. And it's like, oh yeah, this guy knows this guy knows this guy.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, this time it works out, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Eichhorst really liked Mike Riley because he interviewed him, you know, as an associate AD one time, and he just immediately went to him, right? But mm-hmm. a little bit different.
Oh, we lost Dave there. So
I just want to make sure Redcasters know I had nothing to do with that.
Nothing to do with that one. Yeah, it is a little bit different this time around with Carter and Albert's working, you know, to get Rule in here versus when Eichhorst was brought in. But I think we're getting Dave back on. And
I just dropped StreamYard entirely, guys. I apologize.
No. I just want you to know, Dave, I had nothing to do with that.
Sure, Rob. Thanks for kicking me off.
We're professionals, Dave. We covered it up. I don't think anyone noticed.
Yeah.
We'll get around to the staff a little bit here. But Honky, you had a tweet about the salary, correct?
Yeah, right here.
And so
this started to come out here tonight. So what it's a total of 72 or 74 million, but the start date is through the end of 2023 is 5.5 million. And then it goes up by a million each year, 2024, 2025, 2026, all the way up to 8.5 million And then 2027, it jumps to 10 million. 2028, it jumps to 11.5. 2029, it jumps to 12 million. And then it's an 8-year deal. So the last year of it, 2030, it goes up to 12.5. But you had mentioned this, Dave, as you were looking at that. I mean, what does that tell you as you look at those first 3 or 4 years? We're kind of getting a deal.
I'm no mathematician or data analyst, but it appears that the 24 through 26 are the years that Carolina would still be obligated to pay some of Matt Rhule's salary. I think going into our contract, it was going to be up to $34 million. They're not going to have to pay all of that, but we are getting a bit of a discount, especially these first couple of years, first really 4 years, I guess, until he gets the 2027 when he gets the full $10 million. So, Boomer, I don't know if you had a chance to look at that any closer, but it seems like that's how it shakes out.
No, it seems like that. Again, I haven't seen any official announcement or anything on if Carolina is footing some of that bill or not, but I'm sure that was part of the negotiation and contract that has to be ironed out and, you know, make sure it's market value and all that. And yeah, I'm sure they had some input.
Yeah, it's really intriguing. I mean, you want to think of it on a positive spin, Honky. We don't have this confirmed yet, but I mean, reality is what Luke Fickell is just a hair under $8 million a year for 7 years at Wisconsin, but that's a consistent $8 million a year. And if he wins, he is going to, you know, get raises. Now that could happen with Rhule, but his raises are built into that 8-year contract practically, right? I mean, that presumes that he's going to be successful enough to stay because he's getting $1.5 million raise every year. And we do get, we're getting Rhule for $5.5 million in year one and $6.5 million in year two, which should, in the going rate of Power Five head coaches, That's a bargain. Mark Stoops is getting almost $9 million. Mel Tucker's 9.5. I mean, it goes on and on, right? So,
yeah. Well, I guess we're benefiting a little bit from dead money there. You know, at the same time that we'll be adding some dead money here with, obviously I don't see Whipple coming back. So that's 900 some thousand next year that we'd be paying off, and we'd be paying some coaches not to be here. But I mean, this is kind of the price of business anymore. This is what happens when coaching staffs are gone and you're hiring new ones. So it definitely puts us in the top 10 nationally with what we'll be paying our coach. In addition to that, and I don't know if it was on this tweet or was it another one. No, it's this one here. The wrapping up in Lincoln, 8 years, $74 million for Matt Rhule, a $7 million assistant coaching pool. And this is from Mitch Sherman. That's top 10 compensation for the new Nebraska coach and his staff. I guess just to even throw a couple of names out here, here are some other ones that reports indicate that Knighton and Campbell. So who is that? That's Corey Campbell and Terrence Knighton.
Yep.
Yeah. D-line coach Terrence Knighton, assistant strength coach Corey Campbell. They would be leaving the Panthers to join Rhule's staff here. And then also that cornerbacks coach Evan Cooper. And so where's Cooper at right now? I'm not sure if I saw that. He cornerback and recruiting coordinator Evan Cooper will join Rhule's staff at Nebraska. And there's even this from inside Nebraska, former Panthers DC Phil Still, Texas A&M D-line coach Elijah Robinson, and a pair of new strength and conditioning coaches that they are also right now at least being rumored as coming here. So I don't know who's all signed yet. A lot of this is moving pieces, but right before we went online, we saw something about Ed Foley, a special teams coach, being rumored as coming here too. So obviously this is week one, day one. So there's going to be a lot of moving pieces here in the next few days as Rhule starts to put his staff together.
Yeah, and he also has Marcus Satterfield lined up as the offensive coordinator. And, you know, Boomer, we've always been talking about hiring elite coaching staffs, and I think he's doing a good job to start. You know, Marcus Satterfield is an interesting hire, and it's interesting, Honky. I think you mentioned this. I mean, Rhule has had different coaching staffs through both tenures in college as well as Carolina. Some people come, some people go. Satterfield, someone who actually was with him at Temple as the offensive coordinator, was successful enough there to actually get a head coaching job at Tennessee Tech, I believe, if I read that right.
Yes, Tennessee
Tech. And I think Satterfield's from Tennessee, so there must have been some draw there. Didn't achieve success there as a head coach. And then resurfaced back on Rhule's staff as a tight ends coach, maybe the last year of Rhule's tenure there, and then on to Carolina. But then he got hired at South Carolina under Shane Beamer, and has had, you know, middling success there as an offensive coordinator. Obviously, the last 2 weeks have been very good, But I think what I take from that is, you know, I think Rule could have hired other OCs that he's had. Glenn Thomas is at Arizona State, and he's going to be looking for a job. And he could have looked elsewhere, but he really wanted Satterfield, apparently. And more than anything, you know, if Rule, it's Rule's staff, and if he's going to want to run the football, he's going to tell Marcus Satterfield to run the football. So I don't know what to put much into the South Carolina numbers.
Yeah, and Boomer, this is, I mean, here, I put some of these numbers together just to give an idea here. This is 2022 Nebraska versus South Carolina rushing stat comparison. They're so close. This is one of the reasons why I highlighted it. But NU ran for 1,480 yards this season. South Carolina, 1,479. So 1 yard difference. So Nebraska ran for one more. Now, included in that, Nebraska had 33 sacks for negative 247 yards. South Carolina had 27 sacks or 172 yards. They averaged 3.5 yards a carry, or we averaged 3.5 yards a carry. They averaged 3.8. Our long run was 60. Their long run was 52. We had 17 touchdowns. They had 27 touchdowns. So similar stats, you know, there's a couple spots that are a little bit better than us, and we were a little bit better than them and a couple others. But for run the damn ball guy, you're not going to walk away from looking at South Carolina and just be blown away. In fact, the two big games they had here at the end against Tennessee and Clemson, Rattler really went off, and they threw the ball a lot, and he threw it very effectively for what it's worth. But again, I think that this is different scenarios than what they have out there. And I think Rule touched on that today, and everything from fit to wanting to do what's going to work well here climactically. And you need to be able to have a run game, and you got to be able to win the lines of scrimmage. I mean, he echoed so many times what Travis said, that I get the feeling that I wouldn't pay too much showed thinking that they'd be any indicator of what we would be doing here in the future. But it's a good day. I was ecstatic to finally get a chance to just see Rule, even be, I guess, in the same photo with him. I'm not Matt Rule.
I look like him. I think that was just Photoshop.
I mean,
yeah, here's the photo. This is, if you believe, unless you're a fake news person and think everything is Photoshopped here, there is a photo here of me and Coach Rule in the same photo. We can finally put it to rest.
That's his
family.
That's his wife yep. and son and daughter right there, actually.
Yep. They were all, and they
already had a restraining order.
There was a cute photo that he posted, that Coach Rule posted, of the kids in the elevator going up to like the press box, and the photo of Matt Rule kind of yelling, his mouth wide open, and his little, one of his daughters is sitting there, and she's making the same face that he is. It kind of had that little family moment to it. And, you know, and Trev did a great job. We're going to get to some of the audio here, some of the videos of the presser, but Trev did a great job at the beginning, just welcoming, you know, their family, the whole Rural family, to Nebraska. So, and that's something we talked about during these last 70 days, was that Trev needed to vet whoever it was we were going to get. It has to be the right fit, and you've got to make sure that the family's on board and everything. There can't be any
excuses. We did. We really called that. You're right.
It feels like he had 70 days to do this, and it feels like he used every second of every day to make sure that he talked to everyone he could. It was professionally done. I was impressed with you, Dave, the other morning. Sometimes I give you guff for being, you know, Mr. Negativity or something, but you're like, no, you'll give, you know, you give positive credit and everything where it's due. And you were like, this was done well, and you were impressed. And it was really a well done, you know, job search from start to finish by Trev.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they took their time and found the right guy and then closed the deal. Right. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that wasn't easy. Right. Mm-hmm. And so,
and I think where I drive you crazy sometimes is and this is where I'm trying to get better, Dave, is not to turn around now and go, we won. You know, we had a really good day today. This was we did win the press conference, but
yeah,
the work, it only starts now. The work starts today. And we didn't win. We're still a 4-8 team trying to get to a first bowl game in six seasons. So,
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, we're hopeful that it doesn't take a complete rebuild, having to go 1-11 at Baylor, for example. But to your point, different circumstances, feels like, you know, there's definitely some wins on next year's schedule. The matter of just how many can we get to six or more, and then kind of just go from there, right? So it's going to be interesting to see. Well, let's take a deeper dive into the press conference and hear more about what Matt Rhule is all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start here with Trev then. And Trev, he started out the presser really by just going over the vision. And it basically repeats the things that he talked about when he fired Frost in the first place. But that, you know, we're going to be a developmental program. We're going to do toughness and identity. And that was part of these last 73, 75 days or whatever it was, where he said, we're going to spend time to build that vision. So I'm guessing he had parts of this vision at that time, but he wanted to make sure he clearly identified it. And so that first part of it is development.
I just want to tell you a little bit about our vision. It's real simple to me. The University of Nebraska always has been and always will be the premier development program in the country. That's our DNA. That's who we are. For those of you who drove up, you saw the Go Big project. You can see the investment of our donors into that. That's the brick and mortar behind the greatest development program in college football. That was going to be really important to me as we look for our next head coach.
The Go Big project. I'm going to, for you, we did this when we did the live Hail Varsity show at the Hail Varsity Club. I'm going to run this in the background just so people watching it can see what this is that Trev is talking about. But maybe, Dave, I'll start with you. Just as you hear what he's talking about there, that we're going to be the premier developmental program in the country, and you hear that, I mean, what were some of the thoughts that went through your head?
Well, it makes me think that, you know, almost how we one of the most winningest programs of all time, but have not been winning over the last 6 years in particular, but and not to the same rate in the last two decades. We're not the premier development program right now, but I think mm-hmm. his vision is to return us back to that. And that's exactly what we need to do because we were.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Boomer, you're looking at this video here and it's, you know, showing all of the $165 million project that's going up. You know, what does it take to get us back to being that greatest developmental program in the country?
Well, I mean, things like this certainly help, but everyone's got money these days. Everyone has nice facilities. How we see what Northwestern's doing to, you know, mm-hmm. get facilities and, you know, do all the improvements that they're spending, something like almost $1 billion. So
we go 1-11.
Yeah, yeah, to go 1-11, and never mind the one. But yeah, again, it takes more than just fancy facilities because everyone has those. It does take a coach and a staff who's dedicated to it, to finding the players who are willing to put in that kind of work too. Because it's a two-way street here. You know, the common refrain, I think even Rhule mentioned this, is that, you know, players don't want to work hard nowadays. They'll transfer, you know, or they can, you know, with the portal and things like that. Well, you need to identify those kinds of players that are willing to work hard and are willing to, especially in tough scenarios like this. I mean, Rhule kind of has a reputation of being a no-nonsense type coach, and I expect his staff's going to be the same way. Mm-hmm. So you've got to find those players that are able to take that kind of direction and make a lot out of it. So I think that the recruiting end of it's going to be huge, just identifying players that can take that kind of direction and will improve. So not all of them will.
Rob, what was your thoughts as you heard Trev talking about development?
Well, one thing that I know that they did here today, and people have, you know, that I've heard from a few different people, is, you know, they're going to be going in their strength and conditioning coach. He brought in his new guy already. That was one of the first hires that he made. And a lot of the strength and conditioning team are gone. I heard that their offices were cleaned out today, and those guys, you know, they were thanked for their service and everything, but, you know, they're going to be starting from scratch. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about, I think, on Saturday a little bit, when I was saying that, you know, I'm curious because I'd heard a lot of the pundits talking about like body types and development and what, you know, mm-hmm. the difference between seeing Ohio State get off the plane or get off the bus walking up and seeing Nebraska players get off the bus, right? It was like a night and day kind of difference as far as their physique went. So it'll be really interesting to see how some of these players are developing. I heard, you know, Benning talking today about, you know, some of the guys that would be returning from the offensive line, right? Like, and the development that they could go through, and included our friend Kevin Williams and Prochaska and a couple other guys. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how those guys develop and get stronger throughout the offseason. And then he also touched on, you know, the defensive line. That's going to be an area where we're going to have to do a lot of rebuilding this year. You know, regard, there's no other way to put it. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be really interesting to me to see the type of guys that they bring in, they start to bring in to back those players up, you know, because we're going to need next man up. People are going to get injured. It's just inevitable. So as far as like development and all that, I think these facilities opening up, when are they supposed to open again? Was it March?
It'll be next summer. Like, so, I mean, it'll be before the next season starts.
Yeah, before next the season starts. And, you know, and they already have phenomenal facilities. Let's not like, you know, we were in there just
a couple weeks better, ago, yeah.
And they're just getting even better. I mean, they had those cameras on the weightlifting racks where guys could like type in a number and it tells them, okay, you're lifting this weight too quickly, so you should probably go up 5 pounds. Like, I mean, they like it just breaks down everything for them, and it's only going to get better, which is incredibly like insane. If you ask me, like, I wish I had that at the gym for myself, you know, like.
What a selling point that Trev had at his fingertips as he's going and talking to other coaches around the country. And I'm also interested to hear more from Rule over time, what he thinks about Trev, because we said this back when we had Bill Moose and we wanted a football guy hiring a football guy, right? I mean, that was important to us back in 2017. Well, here you really get the feeling of what Trev is as a football guy. Like, Rule talked about how he almost, they were on the phone talking, and it was just like he wanted to just sit there and just talk football with Trev all day. And you get that sense that, you know, Trev, sometimes it's got to be tough to be an athletic director because you got to go back in, put the suit on, and let your coaches coach. But I think Trev would love to just get in there and break down film just with the rest of them. So
he might.
Yeah, he might. But so his second part. So his first part of the vision was development. Next up is toughness.
Secondly, a focus on toughness. If there's anything this program's been about the last 30, 40 years, is this is a program that's based on toughness. And so I was looking for coaches who understood what toughness looked like, what practice looked like, and ultimately getting back to the vision of being the most physical team on the field on Saturday. That's Nebraska football, that's Husker athletics, and toughness was a key component of what our vision was going to be.
Okay, Dave, this is where I'm starting to lose my stuff a little bit watching it. I'm like, oh.
Getting excited, hey, Hunk?
I'm getting excited. You're starting to talk to me here. Okay, develop, schmellop, whatever. But toughness, ooh, yeah, we're going to start hitting, right? You know, we practice.
It's an attitude, yeah.
He threw practice out. He said it. He said the word. That's important. And I don't know. So, again, he wanted to find a coach that aligned with what his vision of toughness was. And what does that tell you? That Rule aligns with Trev when it comes to toughness.
I mean, I think they're perfectly aligned. It seems like, because if you listen to some of Rule's stuff on YouTube about, you know, winning in the trenches and establishing the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball and how to do that is having tough practices and tough kids. And it sounds like they're speaking from the same pulpit.
Yeah. It's almost like Rule came to Nebraska and played here. I know he's a Penn State guy, which, right there, yeah. there's some of your alignment.
But to your point there, Hawk, though, playing for a blue blood and coaching for a blue blood, there's something to that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets what this means.
Well, mm-hmm. and what was he when he played at Penn State? He talked about it today, too. He was
a linebacker.
And he was a walk-on.
Walk-on linebacker.
And, you know, that's a huge part of our culture here at Nebraska. And I think that, you know, he understands what it means. And I think, you know, one of the things that we continue to beat on all season long and even in the preseason last year was just being able to get that line of kids that were there. I mean, even Osborne talked about it last summer when we had him on about how important it was to have those kids there because they were the ones pushing all of the scholarship players to be better because he wasn't afraid to play those kids, you know, and I hope that, you know, and Rule seems to be the guy who understands what that means. I mean, just from that experience alone. So,
well, part of all this, then number three, the third part of the vision that Trev has brought to surface here over the last 2.5 months is identity and having a clear identity.
Third and finally was a clearly defined identity. It's something that I really believe in. We're going to believe in something, and we're going to dive into it, and we're going to play complementary football. And I believe that's what Coach Matt believes as well. He'll get a chance to tell you about his vision.
A clearly identifiable identity, basically. And I think when I think
defined
of that
identity,
defined identity, define it. What is it that you do? What is it that you're going to do well, no matter who you're playing, when you're playing? And what I think of that is offensively, I've said this before, it's the difference between having the philosophy of I'm going to take what the defense gives me, or we're going to have something that we hang our hat on.
I've always been of the approach, hang your hat on something. Even if it doesn't work, you're still going to come out. And this is what we do well. We're going to force you to stop what we do. And really, a lot of that there's a physical mindset behind that. But this idea that we'll come out each week and do something different to take advantage of what you're giving us, well, you got to be good enough to do it first off. You know, there's a lot of times defenses will give you whatever they – yeah, fine, go ahead, throw it 100 times on us if you've got some terrible quarterback. But we want you to do that. What do you want to come out and be on day one? And, you know, there's been a real – oh, gosh, I don't know what a renaissance, so to speak, of physical football – that I'm starting to see happen over the last 3, 4, 5 years at multiple levels. Anyone that watched Philadelphia last night on Sunday night run for 300 plus yards, their quarterback ran for over 100 yards in the first quarter. And this is in the NFL, you know, and for all the people, you can't run Casey Thompson. You can't do this. You know, you can't run your quarterback, can't get them hurt. That's the number one team in the NFL right now with a quarterback running for 100 yards in the first quarter alone. Look at what Michigan's done to reestablish dominance against Ohio State. And there was a great article. I think I sent you guys a clip of it. It was from the Athletic. And it was just basically them saying, look, we'll never match Ohio State man for man, talent wise in all elements of it. But what we can do is we can line up against them and do something different that no one else is doing. Cause everyone's lining up to prepare against spread teams right now. There's nothing unique about that. Michigan goes out and says, okay, we're going to figure out how to basically create an old-fashioned line, bulldoze, run blocking, getting under center, all those things. And teams are going up against Michigan going, geez, we don't see this very often. This is hard to prepare for. What does that sound like? What is that? That's like 90s Huskers all over again, where teams are like, we're not used to seeing option. It was tough to prepare for this team. So anyways, that's a long-winded way of saying I like the identity concept and creating a clear one. I guess, Dave, to start with that, what – from an identity standpoint and creating one, I mean, what does that look like to you? What do you think Trev is hoping to see with that clear identity?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would just dial it back even a little bit further. I want to acknowledge here that, I mean, in this press conference, Trev has laid out his vision for Nebraska football. And it's a pretty clear vision of what he wants to see on the field. We should be able to evaluate Matt Rhule's tenure here on whether he can achieve those three pillars of that vision. And that's like how you set up a business, right? This is a business plan of how you're going to go about running Nebraska football. And now you have to go execute it. That's the key here. But I mean, it's important to get everybody going in the same direction. Matt Rhule said that multiple times. And if you don't have a clear vision that people can buy into, it's really hard to do, right? So we've got the step one right. Now we got to get going in the right direction.
Boomer, identity. Do you have a preference? Is there an identity that you want to see with Nebraska football moving forward?
Well, I'd referenced it a couple shows ago how, I thought Michigan would be a good model for us, just because they kind of do the things you've always talked about that we need to do, the toughness, and the quality line play. And it really showed in that game against Ohio State. By the end of that game, they were dominating the lines, and Ohio State's always going to have better talent than probably everyone else in this division. And they didn't do any good. I mean, by the end of the game, they lost. I mean, it shows where, if you have an identity on that and you're committed to it and you work towards it, what it can accomplish. It's just a great example of that. And I think that's probably the biggest thing I want to see out of the next few years is how can they better the line play at Nebraska? Because that's been the thing that's held this team back this year. I think everyone would agree. It's just, particularly on the offensive line, but even, the defense had a slow start too. So I think that's where you begin, and that's how you win the Big Ten in most cases is through line play. And I want to see that develop, see that focused on, and see it get better is what we need to see. So I think that's a great identity for the conference. And whatever you choose to run after that, you can make it work if you got good line play. So,
Well, one of the things that we mentioned online here today during the presser was that they won it. They did a really good job across the board with how they presented everything today. And the first person right away that Trev talked about and acknowledged was Mickey Joseph, and thanked him for doing a great job, and that he had more respect for him now than he had before, even if that's possible, but that he just really respected the job that Mickey did. I think some tough decisions are going to be made over the next couple of days, not only by Nebraska, but by Mickey. There's rumors of him in Tulsa and other job openings. He's a talented coach. I'm sure there's going to be opportunities for him. But I want to at least play here, and then Rob, I'll get your thoughts after this. I want to play what Rule responded to a question about Mickey, and I thought Rule just knocked this out of the park. But listen to this, and then we'll discuss.
You know, I reached out to Mickey right when I got the job. I'm looking forward to talking to him at some point here and talking to the rest of the staff. You know, I've been on both sides of it. You know, I've been an assistant coach on a staff that's been let go, and I've always appreciated the coach coming in and talking to me. So, you know, I'll try to be thorough with that process over the next couple of days. The most important things to me right now are the current players. I need to sit down with them and talk to them, right? Like, they know the issues in the program more than anyone else, good and bad. I say issues, I mean, like, good things. Hey, this is great. Hey, so I need to talk to the players, and I need to talk to the staff and coaches. And, you know, to me, it all comes down to fit. You know, people have to want to be here, number one. They have to want to be in the role that they're in. And, you know, we have to all move forward. Again, when I've not had success, it's when, you know, some people are pulling in one direction. There will be a very clear vision, a very clear process for how we do things within the walls of the football program and you know, within the X's and O's. And so any staff member that's bought into that, I'd love to talk to them. And I agree. I think Mickey did a fantastic job. And I've known Coach Joseph for a while before that, not personally, but professionally. Excellent recruiter. Players love him. So I'm anxious to have a chance to visit with him and the rest of the staff.
Rob, what are your thoughts when you listen to that?
I mean, I guess, you know, as Trev would say, he checked all the boxes, you know, and acknowledging Mickey like that. I mean, I think we can all agree, and we've discussed it to no end, that keeping Mickey around would be a very big part of this program moving forward. We know what his recruiting is like. We know his connections to Nebraska and the program. But, you know, like Matt said, if he doesn't want to be here, or if he has other aspirations now that he's kind of gotten a taste of what it's like to be a big, you know, like a Big Ten coach or even a coach in a Power Five program, you know, there's no reason why he shouldn't try and pursue that opportunity. Right. I mean, that's something that he should be able to do. But I also feel like, you know, Rule is saying like, hey, look, I'm giving this guy every chance to stick around and stay if he wants to. And I really hope that Mickey does, because I'm selfish and, you know, I really enjoy having him around. You know, it seems like every time that we go to, or that I come to Nebraska and we go on campus, it seems like we run into him, which, I mean, even this last time I saw him walking around the building when we were there. I mean, and it was like, it just felt like, you know, that guy's everywhere. And he's always walking around with a recruit or, you know, or a family of a recruit. And it just, it means a lot, I think, to the program to have somebody like that around.
Yeah.
And
he's very present. I mean, I was DMing back and forth with the high school coach here last night, who said that, you know, Mickey had been at their place four times in the last 4 months, or more times in the last 4 months than Frost had in 4 years. And he wasn't even trying to call out Frost. He was just saying that's how present Mickey is.
Yeah.
And Mickey is, I love the guy. I mean, I want to start this discussion with on the basis that I think the world of him, but I think I've also been wrong in the recent past in saying that it's crucial that he is here. And that's because in my head, I'm thinking of what a big role he can play roster-wise, recruiting-wise, with helping in the transition. The reality, though, is the human element of this is that he's now been able to sniff what it's like to be a head coach. And maybe he wanted to be a head coach 3 months ago. Maybe he didn't. We've heard all the varying rumors, right? But now that he's had that chance, I thought that he really excelled in the role. I think he seemed to enjoy it. He's not necessarily an X's and O's coordinator guy. I think he really is that CEO kind of guy. And that could be a tough transition for him to fall back into a position coach. It could be. Not saying it is. I hope this podcast comes out tomorrow and we're hearing that Mickey's our new coach of whatever position. It doesn't even matter to me. But the reality is that we can only have one head coach. And there can't be fractures in the locker room. There can't be guys that want this guy or that guy. I mean, we have one head coach moving forward. And as Rule said there, you know, if people want to be here, he's interested in talking with them. And so I hope that it can work out, but it's got to work out. Dave, did you have any thoughts towards that?
Yeah, I think you laid it out really well there. It sounds like there's an opportunity for this to work. And it seemed like Rule was very open to that. Mickey staying on staff. And then we've heard things about they're trying to restructure the contract, you know, get him more money, all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, even a high paid assistant is, you know, maybe low 1 million, especially if you're not a coordinator. And so that'd be a reasonable number to give Mickey Joseph, but is that more than the head coach at Tulsa or UNLV or some other group of five school that wants to take a shot on a guy who has really great recruiting ties? And there's been other programs that have taken a flyer on that where you're like, hey, let's hire someone who can bring some talent in here. And, you know, he can assemble staff around him to utilize that talent. Maybe they see Mickey Joseph as that guy. Boy, if one of the Louisiana jobs, one of the directional Louisianas, you know, UNLM, you know, Monroe or whatever, he would just kill it down there. So
What about Jackson State? Do you think
I don't know. I don't know about that one.
I mean, I know that's not recruiting, D1, but.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll see where Deion ends up, right? But point is that I think he could do it. I think he has proven that he has some chops to be the head coach, and maybe in a few more years he's, you know, out of Power Five spot himself. But at the same time, you know, if Nebraska is his calling, he's like, boy, I really like being here. I enjoy being here. He is such a valuable asset to this program. I think he'd be worth the seven-figure salary. It's just a matter of if it's going to work out. So,
well, we've always said this in the past. Anytime we've lost coaching staffs in the past from some of these changes, you kind of know where the – I hate to say it this way, but you know where the great coaches go and the not-so-great coaches go, right? I mean, where they end up says a lot.
Yeah.
And I think we had some good coaches on the staff, and I think we'll see a couple of these – I mean, Mickey could go to a lot of Power Fives as in any position. And as a head coach, I think, you know, if it's a group of five or whatever, that's one thing. I'm a huge Bill Bush guy. And I've been that way for as long as we've been doing this show. He's another guy I'd love to see stick around in any capacity. But if he doesn't, I mean, he'd be a guy that you look at his record and his resume. I mean, he's been at big time programs, and that's where I'd expect to see him. As we're talking about opportunities, though, what I really found fascinating today was when Rule talked about some of the other opportunities that he would have had during this. And while he didn't need this job, but he wanted to come to Nebraska. So listen to this.
So I'll say this humbly and only for recruiting, because normally I wouldn't say this, but I was offered other jobs. Yes. And I just decided that this was the right one for me. So I had the chance to maybe sit a year. I had the chance to have some opportunities to do some TV and some broadcasting. I was offered, you know, some other college opportunities. So I only say that to say how special this is, that, you know, we didn't say, hey, we better go take this job. We felt like this was a really special place with really special people, great alignment, great resources, and then a fan base unlike any other. You know, I can't wait to bring recruits to games and let them see what a game in Memorial Field looks like, Memorial Stadium looks like.
You listen to that, and all I could think of as I was hearing him say that live was Trev has elevated the program, the level of the program throughout this entire process, him handling this process well. And we've seen bad coaching searches in the past. It hurt the status of the program when we would send planes down to Fayetteville and they'd come back empty. It hurt the status when we would see coaches that clearly turned us down and would get million-dollar bonuses and raises right afterwards. That hurt the stature of this proud blue blood program. And so when Trev goes out there and really handles this like a pro for 75 days and nobody knew anything, but that's kind of the way it needed to be, and he handled it the way he did, and then you hear Rule come in here and say, yeah, I could have gone places. I didn't need this. I could be on the golf course making as much money as I am basically, you know, coaching. Yeah. But this was that special. You know, Dave, I mean, what does that mean? How does that make you feel as a Husker fan hearing that?
Yeah, well, it makes me feel good, you know. And again, I can be critical at times, but seeing the level of professionalism that's been exhibited here –
from both Trev and from Matt Rhule is refreshing and what I've wanted to see from my football program in a long time. On the funner side, you know, Boomer, I think I heard – so Matt Rhule actually visited. Trev got him in here, like, incognito, right, undercover, and actually saw the town and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's impressive. Huh? That would be an
opportunity. Well, maybe everybody spotting, like, Matt Rhule at Arby's or Runza or Hy-Vee was true. Maybe
it just happened to be Honky, actually.
Yeah, it was actually me.
Or it could have been him. Yep,
yeah, they sent me out to Carolina to walk around and fill a space back there. So, nobody knew he was gone.
Yep, so. No, it was a well-done search. And, you know, like you said, Dave, the professionalism of it is nice to kind of get some stature back, you know, after the last couple of administrations. It either seemed to be AWOL or just trying to drive things off a cliff, you know, depending on which AD we're talking about. You know, I think we'll feel safe, you know, when we go into like the Big Ten, you know, media days next year. It's not going to open with just stunned silence. Mm-hmm. You know, when our head coach is up there speaking, he'll actually have something to say and it'll actually be, you know, at least worth listening to. It may not be earth shattering, but it'll be good and it'll be polished and it'll present everything in a good positive light to start off the season. So, and that's something we've lacked for quite a while, really. So.
You know, That's an excellent point, Boomer, because and Dave called it out right away back in Big Ten media days when and it wasn't that, you know, hey, we're going to have a losing season because Scott Frost didn't start with an opening statement. It was just more like, why not do it? Right. And at that point, I didn't want to hear that, Dave. I didn't take that well. I was like, oh, God, you know, big deal. Well, I guess it is kind of a big deal. When you see these things done, run right. And somebody comes out and they give what their vision is up front. I mean, it is media 101. I mean, yeah, it's not required. We can win football games if we don't do that. But why don't we do it too? I mean, it's part of just being a solid program all around. And this puts us on good footing on day one with Rhule. We started well. We didn't say anything that I think other Big Ten schools are going to be holding against us for the next 10 months. In fact, there was one point. This was, I thought, was really cool at the moment. Rhule started talking about, I think it was the effort and how hard we're going to work. And you could tell he's getting into it. Kind of the football coaches, he's getting excited. And he said something like, and we're going to work harder. And he stopped himself and he goes, we're going to work as hard as we, you know, we're not going to work harder than anyone else. That's, you know, just because I'm here, we're not going to work harder than how Iowa works. And we're not going to lift any more than what Wisconsin does, but we're going to work as hard as we can make ourselves work. You know, we're going to push ourselves to a limit. And I thought that's a great way of doing it because really the reality is what goes on within the walls of North Stadium. Once he's there, once the whole team and the staff is together, it's not about Iowa at that point. It's not about Wisconsin. Those teams are going to be doing their work too. It's about what do we do? And that's going to be the difference. And so we don't have to compare ourselves to these other teams. It really is control what you can control. And we're going to work as hard as we can work. And hopefully that's enough to be able to beat those other teams and get the best of them. And day by day, you get better to the point where, you know, the Michigan approach with Harbaugh, you show a little bit of patience. It didn't happen right away with Harbaugh, but they kept at it. They kept getting better. They made some tweaks along the way. And now say they've evolved to a point where they've overtaken Ohio State. That's where I'm hoping we're going to get to.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's going to be a little patience. I mean, some of at times our patience may be tested on this, right? It's not going to be always easy. It does seem like he will really start from the ground up and build this block by block. He said day by day multiple times at the press conference. So it's going to take a little while, but I think he has the right approach.
Absolutely. Well, we got two more videos from today, and this one here is physical offense. And Rob, I'll go to you after this. This is starting to get into what's his vision? What's Rhule's vision for what the offense is actually going to look like?
We're not going to be a new spread teams, and we're not going to be like that. We're going to be a little bit more of an old school type of a team. Okay, we're going to be a physical team. You know, we'll be balanced, and you guys, I know you guys ask lots of questions. We'll always try to do what the players do well, but. But at the end of the day, I don't believe you can win if you can't win the line of scrimmage. We want to have fast players, explosive players. We want to have speed. We want to have great quarterback play. But at the end of the day, through the weight room and recruiting, we want to have a physical team that can control the line of scrimmage and control the game. I believe that's the type of team that can win in the elements. That's the type of team that can win on the road. That's the type of team that can have a lead and keep a lead. That's the type of team that Nebraskans want to see.
The kind of team that can win in the elements, that can win on the road, that can get a lead and keep a lead and win the games. Rob, when you hear that kind of offense, what's that get you thinking?
A team that can play on the East Coast, a team that can play right here in Nebraska. Well, there in Nebraska. Team mm-hmm. that can play pretty soon on the West Coast, too. I mean, mm-hmm. my God, yeah. is this guy going to be starting a church by any chance? Because I might he's actually
a preacher's son, you can tell, right?
Reconsider religion here if he's going to be up there. Because
well, they say it's a religion in Nebraska, Rob. So
it is. But hallelujah and amen to everything that man just said. I'm feeling a lot of the same way that you are, and it's probably good that we're not in the same room together. I'd probably turn around and have my hand on your knee or something. Like, my Lord.
I'm glad you stopped there.
I didn't know where that was going, Rob, but I'm glad.
My God. I mean, you know, sign me up for that kind of football because, you know, sometimes I watch some of these other Big Ten teams and I see the way that they operate at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I don't want to have to – like, I don't know if this is going to make 100% sense, and that's okay, but I don't want to have to scheme for other teams. I want other teams to have to scheme for us, and it feels like it's been the other way, you know, this whole time. And not to sound Frost-like, but I'm talking about in the trenches where, like, in the old days, like, they used to be able to – the offensive line used to just be able to tell the other team, we're going to run the ball right here. And I want this team to be able to go back to that kind of football to say, we're going to run the ball right here. And this is where we're going to run it. And you're not going to stop us.
Yeah. And I'd like us not to have to outthink ourselves. You know, just good execution and things don't have to be incredibly complicated to, like, be really good at what
you do. Rule's not going to change the game plan because they line up in an odd front. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not going to happen.
That part is definitely true.
Yeah. And I'm my God. Hold on, I should go get my Kool-Aid right now.
well, we'll finish the last part of this in the last video here, and I'll start with you, Boomer, afterwards. But and we can kind of go around the table on this. It's recruiting, and recruiting's important. We talked about Mickey Joseph a little earlier, and we're getting done with a recruiting class that's, you know, supposed to be getting signed here just in a couple of weeks, and so recruiting's on the top of everyone's mind. And Rule was asked about where he, you know, where some of his strong points of recruiting are, what are some of his philosophies. Let's listen to this, and then Boomer, I'll go to you.
I think my ties recruiting and our ties recruiting in Texas are something that we're going to lean on. I think our, you know, you look at the history of Nebraska and its ties to New Jersey. So, well, obviously those are places that were pretty well known, and then Florida. Those are the distinct areas. And then to me, just studying this job and taking a lot of time to study this job, the in-state talent I'm excited about. And then you draw that 500-mile radius, you know, making sure that we have the best, you know, these might be little things. I want to have the best summer camps, you know. I want to have 2,000, 3,000 kids a year coming to our camp, not just prospect camps. I want kids when they're 8, 9, 10. Everyone should have a chance to be a Husker for a day. And, you know, that's how you find the players that go off and go to an FCS school. Like, I don't understand why I'm in the draft last year looking at first-round guys at FCS schools. Like, I want them here. I want to find those guys. And so finding coaches that are going to – I don't need celebrity coaches who are going to go see one school a day. I need coaches that are going to go and do it the old school way, go see 6, 7, 8, 9 schools a day, speak at a clinic, call recruits. So we're going to have a hardworking staff in terms of, do I have some guys lined up? There's some guys I'd like to bring with me. I want to be respectful of the staff and talk to them as well. But, you know, we need to be able to hit the ground running here soon.
You know, Boomer, I like that everyone should have a chance to be a Husker for a day line. That was, as someone that coached youth football for, you know, a number of years, the idea of having, you know, some of those 10 and 12 and 14 year old kids getting a chance to go down there, whether they're ever going to be recruited or not, is pretty cool. But what were your thoughts there with the recruiting?
Well, just initially, I think when you talked about he was studying the job, but it sounds like he's been listening to your rants here, Honky. I mean, he talked about, you know, the importance of the in-state talent that we have, keeping the quality players we do have. And we've seen some of that, you know, just this last year, you know, with Joseph and some of the other guys making better inroads into Omaha than we have in years, having that. And then that 500-mile radius, I don't know how many times you've harped on that as being a key part of how we need to establish the identity of the program and where we need to look. And then filling it out with the popular choices, the Texas, the Floridas, where you need to get the talent you know, in some of the skill positions especially. And then New Jersey, you know, just a nice throwback to the pipeline years. So, no, he definitely name checked a lot of things that I think he's committed to, and he will be, you know, committed to doing that. And like you said, it's going to take a staff that takes effort. You know, it's always been a challenge of Nebraska. You do have to work hard to recruit here. They're not just going to fall into your lap like they do at other schools. You do have to look for them. And part of that does, you know, kind of go in with the FCS. We've, you know, a lot of kids can go to FCS schools now. They get money to go there. There's scholarships available. There's TV time, and there's avenues to the pros from the FCS. So that's going to take effort to do. So.
Yeah. Dave, what did you think? What a unique perspective he brings, having been a pro coach sitting in the draft rooms. And when he mentioned that about, you know, I shouldn't be going into drafts as a pro coach and looking at FCS guys as my first round talent. He's sitting there saying, you know, basically, if I'm at Nebraska, there's no way I should ever lose a guy like that. You know, I think of Easton Stick and some of those guys that have gone up to North Dakota State, Kyle Emanuel from Skyler, guys that went to North Dakota State, and then they end up going into the draft.
Sure, sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of his – it's interesting. I mean, like, one of his calling cards at Temple and Baylor was talent identification, right? I mean – we've talked about the stars thing, right, Honky? We can talk about this off season, I suppose, because this is really interesting. This is when I heard him talking about this. Is like he believes in like recruiting measurables to some degree. Like, I want to find fast guys, I want to find big guys, I want to find the right frame, and then we're going to develop those guys and turn the three-star guy into the NFL prospect, right? And he really believes and find talent that way, right? And there's definitely those people right here in Nebraska, in our nearby states that fit that mold. So I think that's really, really exciting to hear him speak in that manner. The thing that's changed since he left Baylor in 2019 is the transfer portal and NIL. And that's where you get really excited, because he also, I think, is going to bring in a couple of really ace recruiters that will help balance that approach, right? We need to be a developmental program. We also going to go get some talent, right? That's where Nebraska, we've always felt that we've had a potential edge versus some of the other Big Ten West schools that are also development programs, is that we can go get some elite talent when needed, right? And it's going to be a mashup there, but I think he has the right mentality here to marry those two approaches.
Well, I think that sums that up well, I think. Well, that pretty much gets us through today's presser. There's obviously going to be a lot more news coming out here within the next week. And then, Dave, we were talking about next week's show. Gosh, is that already signing day, or is that even? Or
I
is
think
that
so.
A couple weeks, you know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on here.
Transfer portal opens up. I can't remember. Right. I think it's Boomer. Yeah. Maybe you can look those dates up, but it's coming up quick.
Yeah,
maybe actually, December 5th or 6th is a big day.
Yeah, I think it is a couple of weeks until the actual signing date, but it speaks to the importance of why Trev making this. Yeah. Trev making this move when he did, getting it in early. I mean, we're done now. We've got our coach, and he can get his staff together this week, and it just gives us a good leg up there, because the reality is, as we talked about last week on the show, none of us want to go 1-11 or 2-10 next year, but a lot of that's going to be based on what your roster and your early transition goes like right now. You know, how do you get transfer portal guys in? How does all that stuff happen? And it's really important to get guys in here, especially in a transition in January. We want as many guys that are going to be playing a big role on the team next year here in January, throughout the offseason, throughout spring ball. It's really, really important that they get a good start on this. How many? Put that question back up there from Bill. That was a good one.
Yeah, I'll throw it out there. December 21st is early signing period this year. I think Friday coaches can go out again and start hitting the recruiting.
Dead period ends. So,
yeah, you want to get that
and
going,
then,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boomer, can you look up when the transfer portal opens up?
That's pretty soon, too, I think, this week.
I think that's the 5th.
Early December. Let me check on that.
Yeah.
It is so, December 5th.
To the quarterback situation, it's a good question.
Yeah, so Bill asked how many QBs on the current roster will be here for spring ball. I think Logan has the highest shot. Dave?
Boy, it's so hard to say, because I don't know exactly what they're going to run, right? I mean, if you look at Baylor and you think of Charlie Brewer, you're like, well, they definitely have someone like Logan Smothers would be the right fit. But then if you look at what Satterfield's doing with Spencer Rattler at South Carolina, that's not necessarily the case. And if you know what ruled did at Temple, it wasn't necessarily the case. So I don't know exactly. We're going to find out a better idea of what that offense identity is going to be when the quarterback situation shakes out, right? And so it could be someone on staff, because I think there's big arms and there's mobile quarterbacks, and you also have a very experienced one that still has one year of eligibility left.
Casey has
and may not have a lot of NFL stock right now. So
and he was at the presser. There's pictures of him like at the presser, hanging out up in the rafters. It sounds like Rhule talked to a lot of the players before he actually did the press conference today. And I wouldn't be surprised if Casey stuck around, because like you said, Dave, he's not going anywhere because he can't transfer again. He'd have to sit out a year. His NFL stock is not high. I mean, he's not in anybody's top 10. I don't even think he's on anybody's top 20 list right now for quarterbacks. And you know, so it would make perfect sense for him to come back. You know, and he is
like 24.
I mean, can you imagine him and Rhule?
Yeah, and he'd have to re-enroll in a new graduate program. So yeah,
but he's already got. Can you imagine him and Rhule though, like in a room together, talking X's and O's, based off of what we heard about Casey's studying habits and how he's just lives and breathes football. Right. Like, I mean, for me, that seems like it'd be an amazing marriage, right there.
I'll tell you what though. No matter what, I'd want a competition. And to me, a competition, and this didn't get asked today, but to me, when I think of a competition with quarterbacks, and this goes back to practice, it's hard to have a practice all offseason in green jerseys. And at some point, if you're truly, you know, competing for that spot, I would have loved to have this question asked to him. How do you, and there will be time for him to be able to say this, but how do you determine, you know, who wins spots? And a quarterback, you know, you want to get as many live bullets going around
him. Toughness.
I mean, you hear all that stuff, and then if we get to spring ball and we're tagging off and we're in green jerseys, I would sit there at that time, you know, we should have that conversation in spring and say that doesn't align with what we were told. Now, I don't think that's going to be the case, but you know, I would expect to see, you know, some real rigorous competition.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if Casey Thompson will come back or not, but sure. I mean, in the Boomer's point, it'd be a second graduate degree, he's 25. But if he doesn't have a lot of NFL prospects, that he wouldn't even really make a roster, and maybe he makes a practice squad. And Honky, to your point of Jalen Hurts running for 100 plus yards yesterday, that maybe one more year here where he is a little bit more RPO. Can actually be on a winning team and throw for more yards and just improve that stock enough to maybe make the justification that he can get a crack at the NFL while, and this is the game changer, he's making six figures as the seventh year quarterback, right? I mean, like, what other job is Casey going to make more money at than the Nebraska starting quarterback position?
Even with two master's degrees, you know what I mean? Like, let's not forget, there is another kid on here that nobody ever talks about because he was redshirt this year, but Torres is still on this roster, and a lot of people think he
could Harburg, be the guy. And, I mean, there's
– And Harburg, yeah.
But Torres seems – Purdy, yeah.
I think I've even heard, like, Sip talk about it, and you guys know how much I revere him. You know, he's kind of said, like, Torres is going to be the next guy in this program. And I kind of feel like maybe we might see that competition you want.
So it is interesting if you look at Rhule at Temple, he had PJ Walker and he's in the NFL. And then he had and he was there like most of those 4 years as PJ Walker, I think. And then Charlie Brewer at Baylor was there for most of the time. So he really, in his two stints, had one quarterback, each one that really he rode, right? You know, and he started young and brought him up. It might be different this time around. If he has someone who has as much experience as Casey Thompson, or go through the portal, and you could get someone with experience. But to Rob's point, if he likes what he sees on the bench with someone like Torres, you know, maybe he starts him, and we may take an extra lump or two next year because of that, right? I don't know. We're going to find out.
Yeah. I'm kind of amazed Charlie Brewer is still playing in college. Well, he was, you know.
Well, he was a junior. He was all 3 years at Baylor, and then he would have – I think he had a medical retro of some sort.
Yeah,
and then he had Utah, COVID and then year.
He went to Liberty, and he was their starting quarterback this season, but he broke his hand. So, yeah, he didn't miss any time. But Yeah, somebody said he was still playing.
Somebody said in the comments, Dr. Thompson drops back to pass.
lots of people go to school for 7 years.
Oh, that was Boomer that said that.
No, that was Boomer. Okay.
That's a Boomer.
Doctor, it's the Thompson twins.
There you go, yes.
Everybody wants to rule the world. We have all these 80s references. It's great. That's what we're going back to. All right, Hanukkah, is there anything else we need to cover?
Oh, I think we covered it all for tonight, but it was a fun day. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, by the way, absolutely. Foley was just confirmed to be joining the staff. It didn't say in what capacity, but he's done everything from special teams to O-line coach to tight ends coach to quarterback coach, everything for Rule. He was even the assistant head coach and took over at Temple when Rule left. He was a head coach at Fordham for a while. So, you know, he's a guy with a lot of experience. Picture of him, he looks a little bit older, which was funny because Rule said today he wanted to bring in like some young guys on staff and do that. But, you know, Foley is still a very good guy, and it's probably considers him a good advisor, I guess, in that way. And so maybe that could be your O-line coach too, Dave, that you're talking about. Maybe that's the guy.
Yeah. We'll find out. I don't know. Yeah. Find out. All right, Hockey. I think we'll have a relatively short bet cast, but do you have a parting shot you want to hit us?
Well, you know, I'll just say two things. Number one, Mac and I are going to be starting up a little spinoff, and we've been talking about this for a while. We wanted to do something where it was just Matt and Matt, and I don't think we'll do a whole lot of these shows, but it'll kind of be an off season thing. And Mac, he texts me this morning. He goes, "We're going to call it Matt's Rule." And it's so cheesy. I was like, you know what? That works. We're going to do it. So, our first episode, we're going to do a Matt's Rule on Wednesday night, and we're going to have Dave from Huskies on with us there. So, be looking for that. We'll send out the links and everything there, Redcasters, because we are getting into the off season now. So, I assume Rob, you're going to start doing lunch casts. I'm going to start getting into fan forums again. Rob will be doing lunch casts. I think he talked about doing a breakfast thing at some point. Who knows?
I'm going to take a week off here pretty soon.
The other thing,
we'll do coffee talk. It's just coffee talk.
Yeah. It's just coffee. No big deal. And the other thing was, I was thinking about this driving home about Rule, how we've had four coaches since Solich has been fired. Two of them have been Nebraska guys. I'll call Pelini a Nebraska guy because it was one season in Frost. And then you had Callahan, Riley that were clearly the outsiders coming in. And Rule, at the very least, you have to call him an outsider. He hasn't been here. So if you compared him to Callahan and Riley and you just went through today, at the very least, this doesn't feel like a stretch. It felt like a fit, much different than when Callahan and Riley got here, where Riley had to go out of his way to talk about his couple of walk-ons that he coached at Oregon State, or, you know, this is just a neat adventure. But man, the way that Rule came in and really ruled the presser, he ran it. He had everyone's attention. I mean, he was in charge of it. It just felt different. He felt like a fit. That it was a lot more natural than some of the other guys that we have brought in from the outside. I'll just say it that way. So whether that leads to wins or losses is going to be determined down the road. It's not determined today, but I'll just say it again. I couldn't be happier with the start of it. So guys, enjoy the BetCast. I'll be watching, but go Big Red.
The BetCast picks of the week.
All right, guys. Well, we are in the home stretch. We should probably check the Yahoo Pick'em here and see who's going to actually be on the show at some point. But we do have the championship week here. The full regular season has been completed. I don't know if we've got the graphic up. I think, Rob, did you hit last week? Is that right? Rob, did you win?
No, I sure didn't.
I did. I picked Nebraska at +9. +10.5. Yeah. So
Nicely done.
Thank you. I think it's actually the first time I've ever picked Nebraska on the show and they won.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I just thought it was too high of a spread, really. I didn't know if we'd actually win.
Yeah, it feels pretty good about it at 24-0. You're like,
heck. I'm at 24. Right. I mean, I knew I was going to win at that point. I mean, they should have just sent
me. Yeah.
I mean, my money at that point. So
our current pick'em leader is Rob Holio 423. So
oh, that's me.
Husker Brad by one. So it's very
I'm
close.
Just kidding. It's not me.
This last week here.
Yeah. All right. So it's going. I mean, that's going to be a tight race.
Yeah, this is tight. Like. Yeah. There's no fooling around here. Yeah.
I will obviously. So let's take a look. We've got championship weekend here. A lot of there's a makeup game. Akron Buffalo is a makeup game that's going to be intriguing. Buffalo's trying to get bowl eligible, I guess. But Friday night, the big game is actually has playoff implications. Utah at USC, is that playing in Vegas now, Rob?
Or it is, it's played. I think it's the Pac-12 championship is played at in Vegas, yeah,
yeah. Right. So USC 3-point favorites, over under at 67. Utah was able to slip in there because the Oregon debacle against Oregon State. My goodness, Boomer, what the heck happened there, huh?
That was a nice meltdown. I haven't seen anything quite like that in a while. So yeah, that was pretty impressive. Because how big of a lead was it they squandered? It was like
34-10.
Yeah,
I think it was 34-10 or 24-3 or something like that.
Yeah, and who would let a team come back almost when they're up 24 points, you know? So,
but no, I mean, they did.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, they're playing just, for something.
Yeah, they had something to play for. That was a debacle.
Right. Iowa was trying to come back and make a conference title game. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Oregon is up big. They look dominant, and then they just like forget their wits, and they just are just idiots at some point. They go for a fourth down
and short on what their goodness. Own 20 something. Yeah, it was kind of unbelievable. I didn't know what they were.
And then Oregon State just ran the ball. Yep. They didn't even throw to make the comeback. It was
entertaining, but really though, Dave, when the platypus is at stake, you throw the records out. I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah,
and only half the stadium is full. So anybody got any inkling there? I think I'm feeling kind of chalkish here. I feel like USC is probably just going to take care of business.
I feel like they are too.
I also it'll be interesting too, Dave, because and I swear to God, I'm not doing this on purpose, but there are a lot of USC Raider fans like that cross over, right? And the Raiders are playing San Diego this weekend in Las Vegas as well. The following on Sunday. I think there's going to be a lot of USC fans that make that trip. Like, I know Utah is relatively close too, but I think there's going to be a lot of people more than usual making that trip over there because they'll be sticking around for the Raider game afterwards on Sunday. I think that there's going to be a big home field advantage for USC in that game. And I mean, -3, I mean, USC has, I mean, they've got everything on the line right at this point. So, and I think when the playoff thing comes out tomorrow, I think we'll see them at number 4, possibly. So, you know, but maybe like, right. Yeah.
And it's a revenge game for them since they lost to Utah, by one earlier this season. You know, they always say it's tough to beat a team twice.
Salt Lake City, right?
Yeah. It's really tough to beat a team twice when you got a playoff berth on the line here. So,
yeah.
I would probably bet USC if I was going on, especially if you can get a 3. Hal FanDuel's got it at -2.5.
Did Caleb Williams pretty much like tie up? I mean, he wins this week. I mean, did he pretty much like tie up the Heisman with that performance last week? I mean, that was
this week. Yeah,
good win this week. I think would do it.
I mean, Notre Dame's defense isn't anything to sneeze at, really. I mean, they're not the best defense in the world, but at the same time, my Lord, it seemed like every time that they had him, he was looking a lot like Kyler Murray did, you know, back in the day in college.
He throws it was on the run very well.
Oh my God, there some of those throws he was making were absolutely incredible. So yeah, anyway, I like USC this week.
Yeah, all right. So Saturday morning, another playoff implication here. Battle of the Purples, K-State and TCU. And TCU 2.5-point favorites. Boomer, I mean, TCU's been doing it all year, right? I mean,
yeah, they have. It's kind of a fascinating matchup again, especially I watched both of them this last week, and it's like both of them went out to prove a point and just pummeled their hapless opponents, you know.
K-State's playing good.
Yeah, I mean TCU just curb stomped Iowa State in that game. I mean that was awful to watch. If you have any, you know, Cyclone fans or in your family, you just felt awful for them. And then K-State looked pretty solid too. So I think both went out to try to make a statement going into that final game. And TCU has been living dangerously all year. You hope they don't slip up because I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, some fresh teams in the playoffs like them. I'd hate to see them lose and get booted out for some reason. I think.
Some people are theorizing, Boomer, that TCU could lose this and still make it because there's just no one else.
Yeah, there's not a lot of replacements, but boy, I could see the committee really itching to throw them out. You know, if they
because they need to put in Alabama and and a three-loss LSU. So I mean,
right, there aren't a whole lot of choices to replace them with, but you know, don't even give them the chance to slide, you know, an Alabama in there. You know, if TCU would go ahead and lose this by 30 or something like that, then
sure,
I can see them playing that little eye test stupid game they like to do. So. I don't know. I have a tough time predicting this one because TCU has kind of played with fire a lot this season, and the pressure is going to be on them. But boy, they looked good this last weekend. And but K-State's
kind of like the over. About the over at 62?
I think that might be a better bet. Yeah, because what is that, about 62? I think you can get it at right now. So yeah, this is probably going to be a high scoring affair. I think this will be I could easily see going over on that one.
Yep.
I like that.
Same time Saturday morning. Probably not going to bet on this, but the MAC championship, I just want to note, is Toledo at 9-3 Ohio. Tim Albin, former Nebraska assistant coach and under Frank Sillich there at Ohio for a long time, may win a conference championship. Frank never got that quite done at Ohio. So I'm rooting for that, obviously.
Absolutely. You have a good solid foundation there. Yep.
Yep, that's right. We got Coastal Carolina and Troy. And then a little bit later on in the afternoon, LSU with a kind of a disappointing loss there versus A&M last week, taking on.
Was it disappointing, though?
It was funny. I mean,
it was funny. Yeah, I don't know if disappointing is the word that I'd use, Dave.
It wasn't disappointing to them.
Well, maybe to them, but to anybody else.
I mean, A&M was pretty awful up to that point.
Yeah, they were good.
Yeah,
because you know, A&M struggled with UMass, and then you know, A&M beats LSU, so therefore, does like UMass beat Alabama? I mean, is that kind of how that works?
I wonder how much those players were bonused for winning that game. That's you know, considering they were like the highest NIL team in the country or something. So, yeah, Georgia's gonna just kill
LSU. Well, don't laugh. We may have their defensive line coach on our staff before you know it, Rob. So
that's true.
So Georgia's 17.5-point favorites there. Fresno and Boise State square off. Boise State with a really nice turnaround of the season. They were looked like a mess early, but with
the quarterback. Yeah,
they really did. UCF and Tulane. This is a rematch of a game just a few weeks ago where Tulane won. So UCF gets a chance. Tulane, 3.5-point favorites. Big Ten matchup. Michigan, 17-point favorites over Purdue. What do you think about that one, guys?
Might be closer than that, but who knows? I mean, if Michigan has a fourth quarter like they did against Ohio State, I mean, my God, they just laid it to them in that quarter. That's a tough one. That is tough one.
I don't know how Michigan's going to approach that. Are they going to tear into them like they did with Ohio State? Or are they going to play more like they did, you know, when they played Nebraska and just kind of, dialed around for a half. I mean,
there's a lot of people who think they should be the number one team in the playoff bracket right now. And I've heard it like driving home at night after I do my trivia on Sundays, there's always a college football. And these guys seem to think that Michigan should be the number one team for the college football playoff. And it'll be interesting to see, like, because, you know, they got to go out. I know they don't factor it into it, but maybe it's the eye test. They just lay it to Purdue because that over under 51.5 looks really tempting. You know,
I was thinking of that too. Yeah. I think it depends. Do we expect Purdue to score anything? I guess that's the big question.
Yeah.
I mean, Purdue is known for pulling these wacky upsets against highly ranked teams every now and then.
Depends. How much does Harbaugh have on the game?
Hell yeah.
Spoiler makers. You know, I mean, like last year, I was like, oh, Michigan's going to beat Iowa, but Iowa will probably keep it close. And it, what was it, 55-3 or some ridiculous?
Yeah, it was pretty close. Yeah.
For whatever reason, we don't get the memo in the Big Ten offices that we need close conference championship games so we look more respectable. And I don't know if we got the memo yet. So I'm sure LSU will make the Georgia game interesting, whereas Michigan might just blow Purdue out. I don't know. We'll see.
It's kind of an odd week. It's like the more interesting championship games to watch are like the smaller conferences. I mean,
Clemson, five, North Carolina.
Nothing at stake, nice. Or they're not particularly close, I don't think, or compelling. I mean,
Rob,
I got ACC game. Does anyone care who wins that? Bearing on everything?
I kind of want to see Clemson just fall on their face the last 2 weeks of the season, quite frankly, especially after a lot of people picked them to be making the college football playoff this year. You know, they just South Carolina just took it to them, and North Carolina is, like I said, we talked about them a bunch earlier in the season. I haven't talked about them much the last couple of weeks, but they're a good team, and it'll be interesting to see kind of, you know, what they show up against Clemson. I mean, they're only a 7.5 point dog.
Yeah, they lost last week too. I mean, they match up with them a lot better at 11-1 versus 10-2, with potentially Clemson trying to make a case, but doesn't seem to be it out there. I think I saw a question from Kurt Payne. We'll be doing a bowl pick'em. I would say yes to that. We'll just have to get on top of that as soon as the bowls come out next Sunday. So, yep. All right, guys. Anything else on the Betcast?
No, it's quiet week. So,
all right, sounds good. Yeah, and well, that's what championship week is. You're winding down. Let's see if I can find what I'm looking for. Here we go. Parting shots. Let's get out of here. Rob, what do you have for me?
Well, as usual, just thanking everybody for coming out and listening to us. I think at one point tonight we had almost 60 people watching. So, you know, I like to say that without them, there is no us at this point. Otherwise, we just...
You do like to say that, Rob. That's true.
I do. Yeah, and just remember, Husker football does not build character. It reveals it.
All right. Boomer, get us out of here.
Well, I just would note that not only was it a fun weekend to beat Iowa in a rivalry game, I don't think anyone can deny that now. We hired a new head coach, but we also had a Nebraska ball win over an ACC team, a completely crappy ACC team, but they won, so you can't take that away from them. And even though volleyball struggled with a couple of opponents, they got actually a favorable seeding in the volleyball tournament. You know, they don't have to face Wisconsin or Minnesota, you know,
or Texas.
Yeah, or Texas until the final, you know, the finals. So there were a lot of positives of sports weekend. I know the regular football season ended and seemed to come really quick this year, even though it also seemed to stretch on for an eternity. You know, it's sad it's over, but there's still other things going on, a lot of positives. And, you know, should enjoy the offseason. I think it's only, 275 days till the next kickoff. So, yeah, start counting down, folks. So we'll see you in Minnesota.
See you in Minnesota.
Around the corner.
Like, literally, right, I'll be in Minnesota.
That's right, Rob. Thanks for letting us know where you're going to be at on August 28th or whatever it is. All right. Good stuff, guys. A lot of fun doing shows when we have positive things like victories over Iowa and new head coaches that seem to have their plan in place to get this thing going in the right direction. So we have a lot more wins and a lot more fun shows like this. So for now, let's call that a Go Big Red cast.
Go Big Red.
Huda Media Production.